The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library with additional support from Clark County Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, and Wright Memorial Public Library.
Good morning. Welcome to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. We bring you the Best of the Book Nook on selected days just to bring you an interview from the past. And sometimes people ask me, well, how do you decide which interviews you're going to rebroadcast? And there are a lot of factors involved there. First of all, we've got to find a decent sounding recording. A lot of these interviews were made on cassette tapes, and frankly, some of them aren't that great in sound quality. It's the same reason that we avoid cell phone interviews. We want the best sound we can get, optimal. And another factor is sometimes I'll hear an author has died, someone I interviewed years ago, and I'll try to find those interviews and do a memorial program for them on the Best of the Book Nook. And on occasion, I have had some big surprises when that happened. I remember when I heard that Anita Shreve died, I went and I pulled out my cassette of my interview with Anita Shreve and was astonished to discover that it was blank. I had apparently forgotten to turn on the recorder that day. These things happen. So there's a lot of factors there. One advantage an author has is if they're no longer with us, then there's a good chance that I'll pull out one of those interviews and play it. And also, if it's an author who's really well-known, like, say, the time Lee Child stopped by and he was fairly unknown at that point, or someone like Ian Rankin. Lots of famous authors have come through here before they were famous, and some of them after they were famous, people like Pat Conroy. So those are definitely interviews that I like to bring. Now, there are other factors involved. Sometimes there was something very memorable about an interview by someone who really isn't that well known. And other times, an interview is brought to my attention. I will go through my stacks of cassette tapes, and I will look at them, and I will see the names on them, and I'll say to myself, I do not remember who this person is. I do not remember what book we talked about. I need to listen to it. I got an email the other day from someone who'd been on the program 19 years ago. And she said, I'm looking through your podcasts, and I'm wondering if you have a copy of my interview as a podcast. I knew that I didn't. I wasn't even sure if I had a recording of that interview. So I went back and I looked. And I found this interview with Professor Cynthia Crane that I recorded back in 2001. And I had forgotten about this interesting book. It's called Divided Lives, The Untold Stories of Jewish Christian Women in Nazi Germany. Now, the first thing that confused me was the title. At the time, I didn't really understand when I first read the book and saw the title. What does this mean? What is this about? Well, I asked Cynthia Crane to explain what that means, and that's how we started off this interview 19 years ago. Here's Cynthia Crane for the Best of the Book Nook.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and joining me on the program today is Cynthia Crane. Her book is Divided Lives, The Untold Stories of Jewish Christian Women in Nazi Germany. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Cynthia, obviously, this is a book that is a product of your own lifetime experiences. You probably wouldn't have written this book had you not had a personal connection with the subject. Is that right?
That's partially correct. I didn't know about my own family's history really when I was younger. That my, you know, I knew that my father's family had escaped Nazi Germany, but I didn't really know the stories behind it. Nor did I know the personal experiences of my father because he wouldn't talk about it when I was growing up. But I knew that that part of my history was missing, and I wanted to know more about it, so that was an impetus for me, but also that I was interested in women's autobiography in graduate school. So I think it was a combination. If it had only been that one issue, just my family's history, I don't know If I'm sure that would have been enough, but there are a lot of reasons that I wrote the book, and it was a labor of love, but it took a lot of years. So, and I think that had I not been interested in this topic, definitely, meaning tied to my own family, it would have been tough to keep going because it was a very emotional experience.
Now, if I was in a bookstore and I saw this book on a shelf, I would see it and I would have some idea of what it was about. But the thing I think that would confuse me as a reader and a consumer is when I looked at it the first time it came in the mail and I saw it said Jewish Christian Women in Nazi Germany, mm-hmm. I thought it referred to the problems of Jewish women and Christian women. But this is not true. This is a confusion on my part that I'd like to clarify for our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about women who are both.
That's correct. And that's interesting that you bring that point up. I have a problem with the subtitle myself. Because it's to get everything in a subtitle, the content that's actually in the book, it's so difficult, as you know now, having read the book. No, they were actually split. That's the divided life. They had a Jewish side of their family and a Christian side of their family. And that's why they were caught in this trap, if you will, in Nazi Germany, because on the one hand, the Aryan side protected them, but it did to a certain extent. Okay, if their parents divorced, say the Jewish mother divorced, the Aryan father divorced the Jewish mother, then of course she was sent up to her death. So that marriage staying intact was essential at the time. Which the Gestapo was always pressuring these mixed marriages, the people in the mixed marriages, to divorce, which happened to my grandmother and grandfather. My grandfather came from a Jewish background. He was not Jewish, but he had a Jewish name, Cohn. And so he was, of course, then marked as Jewish. And my grandmother was blonde, blue-eyed, Austrian, came from Catholic Lutheran background. And even when he immigrated in 1938 before Kristallnacht, the night of broken glass, when the Jewish businesses, the windows were destroyed, the synagogues were destroyed, the Gestapo was still after her to divorce him even though he was gone. But then the children left behind, my father and his siblings, were in a bad situation, more so than even my grandmother in some ways, because they had the mixed blood supposedly. So they were the Mischling of the half-breeds, what Hitler called the half-breeds, which is what my book is about, that generation, the products of that mixed marriage. But it always goes back to the family. It always goes back to the mother and father, because that's, where the tie was, where the split came in the family. That's why a lot of the people in my book, they always go back and talk about their relationship with their mother and their father, because before, pre-Hitler, the family was intact. Basically, families were torn to pieces, torn in half. And for me, the fascinating and also horrible aspect of this is that you'd have the Jewish side of the family being wiped out, being deported, sent to camps, struggling, to save their lives. And then you'd have the Aryan side of the family, oftentimes Nazi sympathizers or pro-Nazi. And you probably saw that in the book in some of the stories.
Or 140% Nazi, 150% Nazi, 200% Nazi.
Right. Do you notice the percentages they put on them? Yeah. Unbelievable.
My guest is Cynthia Crane. Her book is Divided Lives, The Untold Stories of Jewish Christian Women in Nazi Germany. Obviously, you spent a lot of time in Germany working on this book. One thing that comes through in the stories of these women, you let them tell the stories in their own words, and the word Mischling is one of many words that is a vocabulary of hate, so to speak, that
Correct.
Was created by the Nazis. Words like Judenschwein.
Judenschwein, yeah.
Words like this.
Jewish pig, correct.
It's incredible to read these stories and just see the way that they tore these people apart one by one, bit by bit, piece by piece, family member by family member. You see them losing their family members. And yet, every story, despite the common bonds between them, they're all so different. These women act different. They have different abilities to be open with you. Tell us about the experience of setting up these interviews and how this all came about.
I'm glad you pointed that out about the differences, because some people would say, well, wouldn't all these stories be the same? You know, I've been asked that question before. Well, yes, in some ways, because they went through the same, it was the same time period, but it's amazing how the stories are different and how they were affected differently by those 12 years of being an outsider. Because basically we're looking at people who were insiders, who were German. And in 1935, when the Nuremberg Laws were passed, which started to divide, you know, state who was Jewish and who wasn't, then the door to the world slammed shut and they were no longer German. You know, it'd be like, you know, we wake up tomorrow, we're not American today. So we're according to these laws, we're something else. So it was devastating. And all of a sudden, you're an outsider. So I think a lot of people relate to this book with this, you know, relating to it in being an insider-outsider. It's not just about Nazi Germany or the Holocaust or Jewish Christian, but it's about all people. And anyone who struggled with identity, you know, has some identification with this book. Just, you know, how do you maneuver when you're not inside anymore? And you have to think of ways to get through your life. Then again, people who are, there's a high number now, high rate of intermarriage now, Jewish-Christian marriages. So I've had a lot of people from that group interested. And I think I just got off the topic. But you said so many things just a minute ago that I did want to point that out, that it a mixed audience has been interested in the book.
Well, let's talk about some of these different women. I had asked you,
I found them,
right.
And that was quite a long process, and I think a book in itself. I have notes written about the time that I spent in Germany, and of course, here I am. I'm coming back sort of a ghost from the past, correct? My father's family got out, and there were still people who remembered them but were very uncomfortable around me, so I saw still some strange signs. It was very creepy at times for me to use that term. I can't describe it. But at the same time, it was wonderful because I went into the Hamburg Rathaus where my great-grandfather had been a senator of Hamburg, and there was a portrait of him hanging in the state house. And then there was a school named after him and also a street. And all of a sudden, you know, this whole part of your life that you really didn't know much about, it's all there before you. So it filled in a lot of holes for me. And then I was able to talk with the women so easily because I had, you know, a family that had been kicked out, to say it simply, out of Germany. So they felt an affinity to me when I finally got through to them. But how I found them, it was just connecting to community leaders, which I talked about in the chapter, The Spirit, and in the law, which sets up the scene of, you know, how I found the women and what happened after that. So it's really just digging around people who knew some of those who had survived from mixed marriages. Then I got announcements in newspapers, which helped tremendously. And I got one in a weekend newspaper, and everybody read this column. It was called von Mensch zu Mensch, from person to person. And it had everything in there. You know, somebody, did you see the bus accident that happened last week? And could you please call this number? And then they had me listed. You know, I was looking for these people. And then all of a sudden, this flood of letters came in. But it wasn't that easy. I'd often get letters where they would say, this is my background, but I'm not really sure yet if I want to talk to you about it. Or I got a letter from another woman who said she'd call me and let the phone ring three times, and I'd know it was her, and then she'd hang up and call me back. So I could tell already that this was going to be difficult. It was painful for them. They wanted to talk on one hand. On the other hand, they were still quite afraid. They wanted to be certain that they could trust me.
You're listening to The Best of the Book Nook on WYSO, revisiting an interview I did 19 years ago with Cynthia Crane
for her book Divided Lives, The Untold Stories of Jewish Christian Women in Nazi Germany. And her timing was good because she was able to interview all these women 20, 25 years ago, because none of these women are probably still alive today. So these untold stories would never have been told if she didn't work on this project. Let's continue with Cynthia Crane right after this. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, your home for independent news and handpicked music. And it's the best of the book nook going back to the year 2001. I interviewed a professor from Cincinnati. Her name is Cynthia Crane, and she had written a book called Divided Lives, The Untold Stories of Jewish Christian Women in Nazi Germany. She was on book tour for the book. She had a book signing that evening in Dayton. She came out to see us here in Yellow Springs, and she was pretty excited about it because they were going to be filming her appearance at the bookstore for C-SPAN 2 for Book TV. It became a program on C-SPAN 2. And I imagine if you did a search for Cynthia Crane on their website, you could probably find the video of that because by a weird coincidence, I have a video of my own on Book TV. I interviewed Louisa Owen about her book about 20 years ago. And they filmed it for Book TV. So if you search for my name on the Book TV website, you can find that interview. I'm embarrassed to say I looked so young. Let's continue now with the best of the book nook on WYSO.
And in your own way, Cynthia, weren't you writing these women back into history?
Mm-hmm. I was taking them back through, but I cannot say how many times they would tell me how much it meant to them to talk about it. They might not tell me right away or after the interview because I know I was drained after it. So I can only imagine how it felt for them. But again, most of them felt that it was really important. They knew that it was important that this generation's dying out. A lot of them. Had been really in hiding. They would tell me, you know, as you read in the book, they would say, I couldn't tell anybody I was half Jewish and I don't really fit in. And a lot of them say they flat out do not feel comfortable in Germany. Ursula Rant, one of the women, said, I feel better in America, England, or Israel. It's where I feel most comfortable. But there's this tie to language that fascinates me because it's so much they're tied to the German language and how they feel that comfort, even though they don't feel comfortable in so many other ways. Because essentially, they're living with their persecutors, which a lot of, when I talk to audiences, you know, the audiences always ask me that, how, I can't even conceive how you could live with people who had been your persecutors for 12 years. Because imagine, then the war's over, and all of a sudden, they're German again. It's absurd, right?
Well, it's funny, here in this country, we seem to be more intrigued and fascinated with the Holocaust and with the rape of Nanking and things that mm-hmm. happened that the Japanese don't want to talk about, the mm-hmm. Germans don't want to talk about it, and
correct.
You almost get a feeling from some of these women in the book that they are making apologies for the Nazis in their own way by saying things like, well, look what's going on right now mm-hmm. in Bosnia. Look what's going on in Rwanda. Why didn't you knew what was going on? Why didn't you come and bomb the train tracks? Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? There's almost that feeling of apology mm-hmm. from some of them. That was sort of eerie, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And some it was accusatory. You're correct. And it made me feel, you know, I felt uncomfortable. I felt sad about it when they're sitting there looking at me, you know, you're American, and why? I don't understand. They wanted me to answer such a question as that. You know, why didn't they bomb the train tracks to Auschwitz? Of course, you know, a lot of people have that question, and a lot of them feel that we could have done something sooner. And I think quite a lot of us here know that. I mean, but we were an isolationist country at that time, right? It's a different time. But yes, I did feel that as I say in the beginning of the book, that sometimes they would fall into the Third Reich rhetoric. As you said, the language is so interesting that Hitler perverted the German language. And they would fall into that, almost the same rhetoric of the times. And some did seem to be, I wouldn't say anti-Semitic, but very uncomfortable with the Jewish side of them, and then the Jewish side of their family. Then you notice how some were, after the war, became very pro-Jewish. You know, just mm-hmm. they wouldn't practice, but, you know, Sigrid Lorenzen's an example of always being behind a Jewish person as if they all needed assistance or something.
Wasn't she the daughter?
Yeah, Sigrid was the daughter of Gretel, and they were really the only real Christians, true Christians in the book. Mm-hmm. Because if you notice, most are
atheists,
non-religious, or they say, I'd say agnostic. Uh-huh. Favor this Jewish history. You know, it's not really a practice. It's just being interested in the history. Even the theologian. I take that back. There are a few Christians because Ursula Boselmann's story is phenomenal. The last story in the book, she's a theologian now, but she does say she has a real affinity to the history of the Jews. That her persecution, her being persecuted at that time, made her interested, or she became more curious about that side of her family. Of course, she lost everybody. Mm-hmm. That story is just her strength is beyond belief to me. And to be around her, you can feel it. I mean, when you're in her presence. And mm-hmm. I do believe that becoming a theologian helped her to forgive, as she says, but you can never forget.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. My guest today is Cynthia Crane. Her book just came out on St. Martin's Press. It's called Divided Lives, The Untold Stories of Jewish Christian Women in Nazi Germany. Let's talk about some of these women. You do a masterful job of giving introductions to each of these women, and then you go into their own words.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that I was curious about in this was, as they're speaking, we don't hear your questions if, in fact, you are asking questions. Now, I'm assuming that you think we're smart enough to figure out that you did ask a question and that they're answering it.
No. I think you're asking me how I put together this book, which might be an easier question to answer. This was a real battle for, I think it took over a year to decide how to structure this, because you have oral history, you know, and you don't want to destroy that. This is obviously not in the same order that it came in. I had to edit and restructure so that it read more like a narrative and not question and answer, because originally it was Q&A and it went all, you know, I had manuscripts piled almost to the ceiling, okay, of, you know, the talks, because they all were taped. They could be 4 to 8 hours and, you know, 90-minute tapes front and back. That sounds – it might not sound like a lot, but when you put it on paper, it's quite a bit. And it was in German. Uh-huh. So
there you go. That's the kicker.
Right. The kicker is it was in German, and it was put in – we transcribed it and then translated later. So, uh-huh. Of course, that process took years. But just to decide the format with – the structure, excuse me, with my editor took about a year. And I finally decided I wanted to keep their voices. And actually, we both decided that for authenticity. And I think you do, you really can hear them. There's a distinction in their personalities. And I kept in some German terms for flavor. You know, some can't even really be translated into English because it's a very German or slang term, like that, you know, we have so many of those words as well. So I did leave it in first person and let them speak and let them tell their story. And I think it's interesting, too, because you can see what they repeat. For me, I'm very interested in psychology, and I think you can – it's a psychological study you could do on these people, which I couldn't do everything in this book. But I think by hearing their voices, you can – for instance, let me just give you an example. In Ingrid Wecker, you brought up Judenschwein before, that she was called a Jewish pig. Well, she was married, I think, a few times, But when she was young, she had a terrible experience in school, and she was an artist. And I don't know if you recall this, Vic, but she was asked to draw a hat. Her teacher's hat with potatoes,
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And so that it would simulate when the teacher came in where they actually had put potatoes in the hat, that what it would look like when it fell, you know, the potatoes fell out. Well, of course, because she was half Jewish, she was drug out and the principal screamed at her. She got slapped or hit. And he called her a Judenschwein, okay, a Jewish pig. Later in her life, when you read this story, and I don't comment on it because she's just talking, but she divorces her husband like instantly after he calls her a Jewish pig. Uh-huh. I mean, you just know the connection there of the pain and what that word meant. And you were talking about language earlier, these horrible terms. I'm not saying that was direct cause and effect,
well,
but
he called her on the
phone.
He
was an alcoholic too.
Didn't he call her on the phone?
Yes, but you do make the connection with that term, and that when you're reading, you say, "Aha!" You know, that's interesting about her story, and I think they are interesting psychological studies, and it just as well as autobiography.
Now you have a connection with, was it a cookie company? Is it Balsen?
Balsen. My grandmother's name is Herta Balsen.
And every time you would tell your story, they'd all go, "Oh yeah,
Balsen Cookie Company." They're around here too. You know, they do still sell them. My grandmother's cousin, it was somehow involved in that company. Yeah, there were only a few people who mentioned it. The first story, Ingeborg Hecht, she's the first story because she's kind of the spokeswoman for the Mischlinge in Germany. She's mm-hmm. very popular. She's written a few books. She does talk. She's the one that had a phobia for 30 years, if you can imagine. She couldn't go out of her house, you know, with agoraphobia, I guess we call it. She never named it and never called it that, but she did bring out the Balsen. She said, "Like the cookies," and she started laughing. And also her husband had published a book by a Balsen, so there was this connection.
Now, she's the one who got out of this mental state, this agoraphobic state, by writing about it.
Mm-hmm. Correct. That was when really her release, she claims, that helped to heal her.
And your woman that you appropriately had last, Ursula, wasn't she last?
Ursula Boselman, yes.
I can see why you saved her
lines.
For last.
Yeah.
She's the one who refers to that book that came out in the 60s.
Mitscherlich's. Mm-hmm.
This book obviously had quite an impact on people in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
I've never read it.
It did on Ursula, that's for sure. I read most of it. It's kind of interesting. I mean, it's a little dated now, but came out here in the 70s. She says in 74 she read it. So she actually read it then too, The Inability to Mourn. And what's interesting to me, well, she says it greatly inspired me. She saw the book in a book announcement, and it basically talked about how the Germans had to get over this period of time, right? I mean, it's very involved. They're psychologists. But she actually met Margaret Mitscherlich. She said, "I have to talk to this woman." And she ended up 10 years in psychotherapy with her. Incredible. And she went to see her, over a period of 10 years. And she had very bad migraines. This is Ursula Boselman. And eventually they dissipated from going through this therapy. Again, so many people wanted to forget about it, including the victims, and they repressed their memories. And Ursula really wanted to be healed, I think. And
she's one of the healthier.
And again, I don't want your listeners to think it's depressing, because I think there's a lot of joy and also hope and incredible stories of strength and survival. When you see what's happened around them, I think it can inspire you. You think, boy, I'm complaining today about, you know, my car won't start, or I broke my leg, or I'm in the hospital for a few. I mean, you look at these stories and you think, oh my gosh, you know, if they can get through that.
And these women survived because of these guardian angels, because of situations where something terrible could have happened and a good person save them or did something to help them. And it's intriguing
oftentimes
to me, As I read the book, you have these funny little asides where in parentheses you'll say, and then she offered me a drink, or then she did this, or then she played with her jewelry again. And we get a real sense of their nervousness. And there's one woman where you'd been used to being wined and dined and given all these cookies and cakes and coffee. And you go to this one woman's place, and she doesn't offer you anything. And then she very abruptly just walks out of the interview at the end.
Yeah, that's the older woman, Gretel Lorenzen, as I recall. Yeah, that sounds terrible when you say they didn't. Doggone it, she didn't offer us any food and drink.
But that is.
But it was so characteristic of the German hospitality, and everywhere we went. I mean, some of the women just. I mean, one woman I remember. She was not in my book because I actually interviewed about 25 people. I think she had 4 different cakes. It was incredible. And Ingrid Vecker, she had a whole lunch for me and a friend of mine who came along with me. Incredible hospitality. I think in the case, the woman that you're talking about, it was a mother-daughter interview. I interviewed them separately. But it was Sigrid, the daughter, who wanted to be interviewed and wanted her mother to be interviewed. And I think she pushed her a little bit on it. And I left Gretel's interview in, even though she says very little, because she says very little, because I think what is left out is as interesting as what's left in. And she left out so much, and then her daughter comes in the next chapter and fills in all the holes, which I thought was really interesting. And yeah, Gretel was already in her 80s, and she was real interested in. She wanted to tell the story in her way and what she wanted to say, and then she wanted to go, leave and go on the bus.
You're listening to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO, going back 19 years to my interview with Cynthia Crane, who joined me that day in studio, and really a compelling book. She did all these interviews, and these women told her so many things about what it was like to try to survive in this fascist society of Nazi Germany. And we'll continue with the final segment of my interview with Cynthia, recorded back in 2001, right after this. You're listening to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO, going back to 2001 for an interview I did with Cynthia Crane. We're talking about her book, Divided Lives, The Untold Stories of Jewish Christian Women in Nazi Germany. And then you had a woman that clearly was very Aryan in appearance.
Mm-hmm. Elsa Bierstadt. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
that saved her life. And, you know, it's real interesting to me. And just this morning I was on Channel 2 and having a discussion earlier about this. But in a way, Ilse's story is about passing. You know, and we've heard that term before in the United States, because she looked more Aryan so that she could pass for German, even though she was half Jewish. She was blonde and blue-eyed, and she did keep repeating that in her story.
But she was brave. She went into the Warsaw ghetto, and she took them food.
That's right. She took her aunt and her cousin food in the ghetto, even though they were shipped, they were killed eventually. She went in and, you know, they let the Germans let her go by. Oh, she's blonde, blue-eyed, she's got to be German. She was sneaking food in. Mm. And then they made a makeshift, like a makeshift tent, and were listening to the BBC, which was verboten, was forbidden, of course. So, yeah, she was very brave. And I don't think she gives herself enough credit for that. She tells the stories nonchalantly, but you're right, it was brave.
Well, it's hard to believe. You actually delineate in the book a lot of the laws and the time frame for passing them they apply to these so-called half-breed people. Mm-hmm. And the astonishing cruelty of these laws is incredible.
That's incredible. And there are over 400. I think the only time that I have the laws, I have a few laws in Ingrid Vecker's chapter, because she had them with her that day and had them on her lap and just kept reading them off and then how it applied to her. And interestingly enough, in Ingeborg Heck's book, that's what she does. She has a law at the top of her each chapter and then how it affected her family. But they're incredible. And students of mine who've read the book, too, they look at the laws and they say, these are absurd. How could anybody, you know, they're nonsensical when we read them. It seems like fiction.
Well, they made sense to the Germans because they had reasons for doing this. They were destroying their will to live, their will to survive, their ability to earn a living.
And there's even a law that Jewish students are not allowed to receive any awards. And, of course, that well, it applied to Ingrid Becker because she was a good student and she could have won awards, but she wasn't. It was not permitted. And oftentimes they had to downplay their intelligence, or they would get good grades, but the teacher would still give them a bad grade. It was crazy. I mean, they lived in chaos. And, of course, you know, after I heard my father's stories and my grandmother's, you know, it really became clear what kind of – I knew what kind of world it was that they had lived in when I started these interviews, because my grandmother started telling me stories just over – a little over 10 years ago when I got a lot of the stories. I would go over and she started talking to me for 4 hours at a time, and she's a wonderful storyteller. Still alive, 97, very cogent. Walks, gets around great. She's starting to lose her eyesight, but to me, a real heroine. She got the four kids out by the skin of her teeth, and a lot of good people in the States helped as well. The Quakers, who my dad gives credit to, because they put together money to save people, and they needed that guarantee here, of course, you know, to be able to get to the U.S.
No, was it your dad who you persuaded to go to Germany and he didn't want to go there?
Right.
And then he went up and he looked at their old house and he was appalled to see that the nameplate on the door next door was the same family that had informed on them and caused all kinds of problems for them. And he was just very upset by that.
He was visibly upset, yes, very upset. He just saw the name and his face, I think, went white quite a number of times when he was there. Because my father's last name was Cohn and the Cohns lived next door. My grandfather was a doctor and people were coming and going a lot anyway. They watched the house. And, of course, an Aryan's word against a Jew's word was always – that was it. Mm-hmm. They could say anything. They could have said, oh, they're going out after curfews, and they could have been thrown in prison. So, yeah, apparently they gave him a hard time, their neighbors. And so for my dad to see that the family was still there was, I think, unnerving for him.
There was a Lena Wertmuller film a number of years ago. I can't think of the title right now, but part of it takes place in a concentration camp, and you have a situation where one of the prisoners jumps into basically a latrine and chooses to drown and disappear rather than put up with all this horrendous stuff that was going on. In the book, we have accounts of relatives killing themselves rather than go to the camps or rather than lose their personal freedom. You interviewed a woman who eventually took her own life.
Correct.
This must have been a haunting thing for you to talk to her because she was a very charged up person, wasn't she?
Mm-hmm. You bring up, this was Ruth Yost in the book. She was incredible. She was my first interview, so I always have there was some special connection I have to her. But she was always fighting for the underdog. When anything, you know, post-World War II was, you know, against her, if she didn't like it or there was a group that was being persecuted, she always jumped in there and fought for the underdog. And the energy was incredible that she had. That's why I found it really sad that she lost in her battle to maintain her mental health. But she did talk about the time that she had been institutionalized and she had not been eating she said, but I drank water so I survived, because she had tried to kill herself before. But she was living, she was so she was very sensitive, which is a good thing, and emotional. I think you can see that in the stories. And she was very attached to her father, and she was the only one really raised with a sense of, I mean, she had a Jewish faith. Her father took her to synagogue. And she lost her father. He escaped when she was 8 years old, and I think that was the first bond that, you know, you could tell through the whole story. She kept talking about her father. It really, really wrecked her. And then she was raped by Russian soldiers when they liberated Eastern Germany. So she just, I think, had it. And then her partner in life died. But in that story, I think it's so fascinating, that whole history of, you know, her father and her relationship with her father and her mother, and how her mother kept saying she was going to educate out of her all that was Jewish, because she knew she had a bond with her father. And her mother sounded like the, I hate to say it, the stepmother, evil stepmother or something out of a, you know, the fairy tale. Again, the stories almost seem like fiction at times, that you can't believe it. But yeah, when I found out about that with Ruth, it wasn't a good time. We found out a year later.
My guest is Cynthia Crane. Her book is Divided Lives: The Untold Stories of Jewish Christian Women in Nazi Germany. I'm wondering, Cynthia, what question would you like an incredibly articulate person to ask tonight for C-SPAN so that you can answer it?
That's a good question to ask. Yeah.
Come on now.
What would be the? I've been asked so many questions. It's a tricky one. There's also been times when I've been speaking and signing where people have gotten into debates there and actually started arguing in the audience. So it can become a very interesting – it could be a very interesting time tonight. I don't know. People have very strong feelings about this period of time, I think. An articulate question. I think all the questions you've asked me are probably the best ones I've heard.
Okay.
A lot of people ask me how I found the women. I think that's really important to people. They also want to know about my father and, you know, what had happened to him. They ask me more questions about that. And my father was actually beaten every day by his Nazi teacher when he was 10 years old. And he didn't know what a Jew was, and as he'll say, he found out pretty quickly what it was and what it meant, because he was raised Christian, so he didn't know. And, of course, you know, at that age, you want to belong, so everybody in his school, most everybody, was wearing the Hitler Youth outfit, and he just wanted to wear the outfit, too, and belong, but instead he was beaten, and he was actually beaten bloody every day. Almost a year. My grandma couldn't really do anything. She just was trying to get them out of the country. She couldn't, and her frustration was she couldn't protect him very much anymore.
Now, you told one of the women that you interviewed about your father being treated this way, and she didn't believe you, did she?
Yeah, it was really strange. I left that in there on purpose. It was Ingeborg Hecht, actually, and well, she said, why? She thought he was in a gymnasium, which is a high school. But of course, he was much younger than that. And she said, oh, well, they hit people anyway in, like, elementary school. And I don't think she quite got what I meant by the beatings, not just being smacked or paddled or whatever. And also, she said, just because his last name was Cohn, which, of course, that was one of the reasons. They had, you know, that definitely, I mean, it's a name that means high priest. It's a you know, in our past, there were people connected to the Jewish religion, although we don't have any idea when. As I said in the book, we actually, my uncle checked this out as well. We could find people in our family, and this is back to the 1700s, but there was no mention of them in synagogue or anything. So the tie, it had to have been broken a long time ago.
You're not related to Roy Cohn, are you?
No. There you go.
My guest has been Cynthia Crane. Cynthia, I see we're running out of time, but I have one more question. Mm-hmm. I was very impressed to see that St. Martin's Press put out your book, and I mm-hmm. know there's a story there. How on earth did you get a book deal with a huge press like them? How did you do it?
Yeah, that's a very long story. because it took quite a long time. I had a very nascent manuscript, and it was very messy. And I happened to hit upon an editor who was very interested in the topic and knew that it – I mean, this is a part of – these are untold stories. I mean, this is a part of the Holocaust that has not been looked at before. No one has really ever written about the Mischlinge. Not a full book. I mean, there's been chapters in history books, but not stories like this where you can see that there were quite a lot of people in this situation. So this woman in particular is very interested, but it took a long time to find that interest. And, yeah, it's a big press, but it's not like Stephen King. You know, you walk in and here's $1 million for your book. So I think people who are out writing, who write, know that. And for me, when they first accepted it, the topic wasn't even as hot as it is now. I think that the Holocaust, people are becoming more and more interested in it and World War II because people are dying. And so this became, you know, more important and people – I guess I have a larger audience than I thought originally that I would, because people have been interested from races, all different races, classes, you know, gender. It seems to cross all lines. And because it says women on there doesn't mean men can't read it. I actually had 4 guys read different versions of the book, and they loved it. So I think it's for all people.
Well, I'm a guy. I read it, and I enjoyed it.
Great. So, and if anyone's interested, I have a website, dividedlives.com, mm-hmm. and it has excerpts and, you know, photographs, a lot of information. So if they're interested at all, they can always go jump online and check out that website.
Very good. It's really a treat to meet you.
Yeah, and thank you for having me, Vic. It's been great.
My pleasure.
And that was Cynthia Crane on the Best of the Book Nook, recorded back in 2001. And tune in tomorrow at 10:30 on Sunday morning. We'll bring you another Best of the Book Nook from 2001. A really fun interview with Lisa Scottolini talking about her novel, The Vendetta Defense. And Lisa has a new novel, an historical fiction novel, coming out early next year. And something to look for. For the Best of the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks, as always, for tuning in.